Welcome to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. Michael W. Dean of the Freedom Fiends cooks up a very special blend of liberty, guns, sex, rock and roll, drugs, and thriving in spite of the state in an increasingly worrying world. All with a rotating cast of nifty guests who are also up in the middle of the night.
Anarchy Gumbo is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network. Welcome to another fun and feisty episode of the Anarchy Gumbo Show. This is Mr. Michael Dean. Today, our guest is Monica Perez. How are you doing, Monica?
Good. How are you doing, Michael?
I'm great. And can you tell people what you do in life and for a living and for fun and for media?
Sure. I have a radio show on News Talk WSB in Atlanta.
That's like a 50,000-watt station, right? It's a giant station, right?
It's a clear channel station.
Yeah.
And when I used to be on at night, I got calls from Chicago.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't know that clear channel isn't just the name of a network that
right.
owns. It's a type of station that the company named it after. It means they...
Yes, that's right. It's not actually owned by clear channel. It's owned by Cox. But it's a station where 7:50 a.m. cannot be used anywhere else in the country except by WSB.
Yeah, and a lot of stations
that are
not clear channel are 50,000 watts in the day and then like 400 watts at night, because AM radio bounces off the ionosphere at night and can go around the curvature of the earth. It's kind of neat science.
Did you ever hear that they suspect that it's theoretically possible to hear FDR's fireside chats still because they never stop bouncing around?
On Earth or in space?
No, I think it was supposedly within that because it bounces around on Earth, but in space, I think for sure you can hear it. It just goes on forever, like the Big Bang.
Yeah, they could be listening to Monica Perez in space because AM 50,000 watts leaves this Earth. That's kind of cool.
Yes, it could be.
Yeah.
So I'm on now Sunday during the day, and that does have as much scope, but it's pretty fun because I think I could possibly be the only anarcho-capitalist radio show host on your super mainstream station.
No, you're one of two, I think. Free Talk Live out of New Hampshire.
Besides you.
No, I'm not Free Talk Live. Free Talk Live out of New Hampshire are syndicated on about 150 stations around the country, and about 8 or 9 of them are clear channel stations.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And they're anarcho-capitalists?
One of the hosts is straight up anarcho-capitalist. I think the term he uses, he alternates between the term anarchist and the term voluntarist, and the other host is a minarchist. But there's a lot of talk of straight up anarcho-capitalism on there.
Awesome. All right. Well, yeah. I'll have to start listening to that every week.
Yeah, they're on the Liberty Radio Network also, which is a streaming network, which this show, Anarchy Gumbo, is on. And I'll give you the link for that. It's LRN.FM. It's kind of like I describe, and there's a bunch of podcast only non-radio shows on there. There's about 20 of them, and about 17 of them are anarcho-capitalist or voluntarist, and about 3 of them are minarchist or constitutionalist. And I describe them as NPR for anarcho-capitalists, because it's really good programming, and it's 24/7, and it is not what you hear on most radio.
No, and it's such people. What I think people don't realize is it sounds like a kind of fringe thing, or maybe you just want to smoke pot, But the depth of the thought, both from political philosophy and economic theory, it's just never ending. Like there is no question that cannot be answered in a theoretically consistent way in the anarcho-capitalist body of theory.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So I love that stuff. It can never end, in my opinion. I just love it. And I think people are really waking up to the ideas of this now that they see how totally broken the kind of... I mean, I have no objection to constitutionalists. I respect them, but I feel like the Constitution has proven that it cannot create a government that preserves liberty by force.
Yeah, I'm a recovering constitutionalist myself. That's how I describe it.
It's a nice idea. Yeah. You know, I love Ron Paul, and he is, but I just feel like the American experiment actually failed.
Yeah, I mean, I have three angles that I wouldn't say attack the Constitution, but, remove my consent to be governed from it. Basically, the first is it's a system that encourages, that allows violence. It allows taxation. It allows one party telling another what to do when they're not doing anything violent. You know, it's the moral aspect.
Against peaceful people. That's
right.
The problem.
Right.
That you shape the behavior of peaceful people by threat of violence. It's inherently, that's why Tolstoy, Leo Tolstoy, was what's called a spiritualist anarchist. He just thought it was immoral.
Yeah.
Like Christians could not support that.
He was an interesting cat. I really like him. And, you know, a lot of people kind of lump him in with like Marx for some reason. And he's not, and you know, for what it's worth, I mean, Marx in his own cynicalist way, you know, leftist way, was basically an anarchist. Lenin and Marx kind of, I don't want to get into that. But, the second reason that I don't believe in the Constitution is I didn't sign it. So how can I be held responsible
right.
for, you know, agreeing?
But you have not consented.
And the third is, and this, you know, if the first two arguments don't work on people, the third one I try to use is, you know, how's it working out for you now? And I think that the thing that's coming up with the gun thing is a lot of people who've always said, you know, I love my country, but I hate my government, or, you know, we need to have a small government or whatever, you know, or the people who think, well, you know, I obey all laws and I think potheads should be thrown in prison. You know, how are you going to feel when what you're doing that's moral becomes illegal? And I think
when I lived in New York and they banned smoking, I was a smoker and they banned smoking from bars. And a friend of mine was all for it. And I said, you know, wait till they take your coffee away. And he said, they'll never take my coffee away. They're taking the soda away. If I had said, wait till they take your soda away. It's a slippery slope, and you simply cannot impose your laws on your preferences. See, that's the thing. It comes down, it deviates from principle, and it's just about people's preferences, and there's no place in government for that. You can't use force for that. I think that's where the breakdown comes from, what is now considered conservative, the kind of neoconservative party line of the Republicans, for example.
I saw your article, 7 Reasons Libertarians Can Be Happy That Romney Lost. I was kind of hoping Romney would win, and the only reason was because I was waiting for the lefty anti-war crowd to come back. You know, all those people that were marching in the street under Bush, calling him a fascist, calling him a warmonger. I mean, a lot of those people were at Obama's coronation today. You know, what happened? When I was a kid, I mean, Democrat politicians were always heinous, but Democrat people, when I was a kid, were the good guys. They were the anti-war people. They were the pro-weed people. What happened to those people, man?
I know. I kind of want to coin a phrase, neoliberal. I think it's taken, and it doesn't really mean what I want it to mean, but it has come where I noticed this the first time I lived in California, which was a while ago, that there was this liberal fascist center where the left embraced welfare and then secretly embraced the warfare thing. And I noticed it because Dianne Feinstein, I was reading an article, it was an old article even then, but about how she wanted to shut down the O'Farrelly brothers, was that it? Like the porn theater in San Francisco?
Oh, no, the O'Farrell brothers. And
yeah,
why do I know that? I don't know.
She was the mayor.
I'm from San Francisco. I live in Wyoming. My wife and I moved here 3 years ago because we like guns and we hate being told what to do. You know, how many ounces
That's
of...
That's a good place to be.
Yeah. I lived in San Francisco 16 years and I lived in LA 5 years and I lived in Agoura Hills for 5 years. So I know California. And I actually voted... I voted for Feinstein about 22 years ago, and a lot of what I'm doing now is making amends to the world for that.
Right. But this is when I realized that they were full of it, because she was trying to close down the porn, and I said, wow, I really thought, at least the liberals, they want to steal your money, but at least you get your pot.
And your porn, yeah.
Yeah, your porn, whatever. And then now you see that Obama and Feinstein leads the charge on FISA, which allows this warrantless wiretapping, and the NDAA, which allows indefinite detention without charge. These guys, the Democrats, are the ones who are doing it. So, yeah, I feel like it's the worst of both worlds. Instead of compromising, okay, give up on your welfare and the other side says, all right, I'll give up on the warfare. They say, all right, we'll have both. And all happy, and we've all got the problem.
That's the result of left-right politics, is everybody gets screwed by the other side to the point where they're indistinguishable. And really, I look at Obama being coronated today as like the fourth term of George Bush. I really do.
Yes. Because people forget that George Bush gave us Medicare D, which was huge expansion.
Gave us. Thank you. Thank
medicine.
You for giving us that.
That's right. And but also, that No Child Left Behind, all these socialist policies you get from them.
Anti-gun too, man. Yeah. He passed some gun control. It was subtle, but he also he also gave up his
anti-war left.
He gave up his NRA lifetime membership when they said that the ATF were jackbooted thugs, which they are, man. They're the definition of it.
Oh, absolutely. And they're the ones who are running those guns to Mexico from Operation Fast and Furious.
Yeah. Let's not talk about all the stuff that's going on now. That's what everyone talks about. Let's talk about something else.
Okay. All right.
Actually, I just remembered, it's not the O'Farrell Brothers Theater. It was the O'Farrell Theater and the Mitchell Brothers Theater. Two different porn theaters.
That's right. I read a book about it. It was a whole full-length book about just that issue. I think there were some crimes involved, but I just picked up on that high-end Feinstein thing.
I didn't read any books about it, but I dated girls that worked at both places back in my wild days.
Really?
Yeah, and the crime...
When things were real. That's when things were real. That must have been extra fun.
The joke the girls had was they didn't call it the Mitchell Brothers Theater. They called it the Mitchell Brother Theater because one of them had murdered the other one.
That was it. It was a true crime story. That's what I read.
Yep. And, there were conservative Christians who said, see, porn leads to murder. No, I think having cocaine illegal led to that murder.
Oh, really? I didn't know about that. But I do feel like the whole thing with the banning pot and stuff, if the kids were, the guys who commit crimes, whatever most crimes are committed by, like, men from 16 to 24, something like that, if they were getting high instead of getting drunk, I bet the crime rate would go down.
Maybe.
You never know.
Yeah, I mean... I've been clean since like 94, but I remember pot making me mellow, and I remember alcohol making me spirited at best and really cranky and confrontational at worst. Like I'm five five, and I'd go up to bouncers and get in their face for no reason, drunk.
Yeah, you're not doing that on pot, from what I understand.
No, I didn't, and I'm certainly not doing it now. I sit in my house in Wyoming with my wife and read books. It's nice.
Yeah, I love, that's all I ever want to do. That's why I feel like I used to say I just want an orange tree and a library card until I realized that a library card was fundamentally immoral. I'm like, I'm just stealing those books.
I don't know. I'll go to a public library. I mean, that's, people say, you're not a real anarchist because you go to the library. I'm like, well, there's not quite a monopoly with that. But when people say you drive on the roads, there is a monopoly. And that's such a poor argument. And there's no ethics in it at all when people say, well, the government has a gun to your head, and you let it do what it's doing, so you're bad. That's just survival, man.
They take your money. One of my kids goes to public school. I mean, they take your money, and they tell you you're going to pay for it, whether you use it or not. At a certain point, when the tax rate gets high enough, you have no choice but to embrace your dependency on the government. There's nothing you can do about it, I think.
So you're kind of like an anarchist soccer mom, huh?
Totally. Yes, soccer mom, a little baseball. I have three little kids. And actually, I used to be an investment banker. I have a lot of credentials, a lot of education and everything. And then 10 years ago, I had a son. He had Down syndrome, still does. And I stayed home. I was like a stay-at-home mom. But I had all this education and all this real-world experience. And I was interested in reading this stuff. So I, all of a sudden, because I didn't have to answer to a boss, I didn't have to spend all my waking time reading trade rags or whatever was, you have to stay current in your industry. I was able to really explore my own interests, what I thought was the truth. And I began to see how I think society is really structured, like the true nature of the state, the true nature of this left-right kind of war we have going on here. And I feel like most people who have the education don't have the time or the freedom to really dig in. My husband works like a dog, and he just cannot stay educated on anything that's going on outside his particular realm, and then definitely isn't digging into theory. So I feel like I had this unique opportunity because I was home with the kids, kind of starved for intellectual stimulation, that I happened to be able to make intellectual strides, even though most of the stuff I do is, you know, clean up dog poop and change diapers and stuff.
Yeah. Do you have a kid with Down syndrome, you said?
Yes.
Have you ever read a book, a nonfiction book about dealing with Down syndrome called Life as We Know It by Michael Berube?
No.
I just had to ask because I used to be in a band with the guy who wrote it, and he is one of the most outspoken liberal tenured college professors in America. He's actually on, who's that terrible neocon who wrote that book, like The Professors, the 101 Academics Who Are Ruining America? Michael Berube is in that list. Yeah. God, what's that guy's name? He's one of those
Well, everybody I know who has children with Down syndrome, just the regular moms, like if I go to a little group of, you know, play date or whatever, they're basically all into the welfare state because they get money. A lot of them get money from the government. And my argument to them is, wouldn't you rather have the prosperity, the freedom, the lower tax rates to be able to take care of your own kid? You know, not to have to protest and riot and vote other people's money away just to keep this strong arm structure in place.
Agreed. It's a really bizarre book. You might want to check it out because it's Michael Berube, Berube. I think there's some umlauts over some letters there. It's French Canadian, of course. I'm French Canadian, so but English American, French Canadian American. But whatever that means, it's just lines in the sand, lines on a wall that somebody made up before tea. It's actually got some really solid advice for parents dealing with kids with Down syndrome at the first three chapters and the last four chapters. But the middle of it is all this like scathing demand for universal health care at the point of a gun. And I used to be in a band with this guy in Charlottesville, Virginia before I moved to California. So my wife and I moved from California to Wyoming, and we love Wyoming. And where did you and your husband move to Florida from?
We live in Georgia, and we moved. He's from, so you, I'm
you
in Atlanta.
You live in it. Oh, okay. I thought your station was in
California.
Florida. Your
no,
station's
I lived in
Atlanta.
California for
okay.
a while.
All right.
It's Atlanta, and my husband's from Texas. We lived in Texas for 6, 7, 8 years, depending on how you look at it. I'm from New York, and then we had been living in California before we moved to Texas and really got a taste of that boy. We really had to move out because we just hadn't factored in the tremendous impact of like the property taxes and the general cost of living. So even though the jobs were better there for my husband's industries and like kind of sports and entertainment, we just couldn't make ends meet. And we both have JD MBAs from Stanford. Like we should be able to make ends meet, you know? It just shocks me because I grew up very poor. My father's a truck driver. I'm the youngest of nine. And I figured if you did all the things they told you to do, that you'd have a yacht by the time you were 40.
Yeah.
And we bought a house like we were supposed to, lost the equity in it. You know, we just, every time we do what we're supposed to do, I find that the money goes either to taxes or to interest. You know, before you realize how much it costs, you're in school loans up to your eyeballs, and it's just a crazy system. I feel a little bit scammed, but.
Where in New York and California did you live?
I am from New York, so I grew up in Rockland County, and I'm originally, my family's from Brooklyn, but I also lived in Manhattan when I was an investment banker. I lived in Dallas and Houston, and then we went to Stanford, so we lived in the Bay Area for 4 years. And in L.A., I lived in North Hollywood, Toluca Lake area.
Yeah, so I'm from upstate New York, too, the far westernmost county, Chautauqua County. You know, we're Jamestown and Chautauqua and Mayville and Westfield. I lived in all those towns growing up the first 18 years.
That's out there.
Yeah, that is out there.
Yeah, really?
Those are the people that cling.
They got guns out there.
They cling to their guns and Bibles out there. Yeah,
that's what I was going to say. They got their guns out there. That's a whole different place. It's like in California. You get outside the city and the people are of a totally different mindset.
Yeah, but the political power comes from the city. So you have Chicago controlling all of Illinois, which is mostly rural gun owners. And you have the same thing in California and you have the same thing in New York. It's disgusting.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. No, you're depressing me.
No, no, we're gonna have redemption in the third act. This is the end of the first act, so we're gonna go listen to some brilliance from our sponsors here and then come back. All right.
Okay, great.
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes. Follow twitter.com/fiendtorrents to grab the past episodes and new ones as they post. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents, while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding the Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down. That's twitter.com/fiendtorrents.
You're listening to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast, a tasty stew of freedom and fun. Subscribe at kittyfeet.com. That's KittyFeet.com.
So, no, you're not screaming. You sound animated. I'm just really mellow. Really mellow.
Okay.
Yeah, mellow. Yep, I've really tried to avoid looking at the Obama coronation today because my 91-year-old dad called me and was depressed. And he was like, I don't know what's happening to America. And none of my other three children think it's a great thing. And I wanted to talk
really?
To you. Yeah. And he's like, I wanted to talk to you because you don't think it's a great thing. I cheered him up a little bit. It was good.
Yeah. No, I hate current events. I can't watch it. I have to say my radio show is, I mean, I would rather do podcasts on economic theory in a way because I just love the meat of the matter, and the current events depress me. So I force myself to watch TV and listen to and read the newspaper because I feel like we have to be informed to be able to address the real issues, and you kind of have to stay ahead of it because I think we're at a point where there might be a tipping point here with between the financial crisis that is surely awaiting us and the monetary crisis, currency crisis. They're taking the guns away or they're trying to. I feel like there may be crises down the road where people like us who, if you have ever heard of Albert J. Nock, called the remnant are the people with the ideas for when society needs a little rebuilding. So we've got to stay aware of it. But generally, anything that has to do with just sensationalism, I try to avoid.
Yeah. Yep. It's I listen to a lot of different media. It's mostly alternative media, and a lot of it deals with current events, but I tend to like more and try to create more the things that are more like would be considered in 100 years like the books rather than the daily newspaper. You know, The daily newspaper is very important, but I don't want to be the one creating it, and so many people do it so well. Free Talk Live, you really got to check out Free Talk Live. I mean, they've been running 10 years.
I will. I'm embarrassed that I didn't know. I can't believe it because I'm not really, like, I don't watch or listen as much as I read. I just find it so much faster to read the stuff, so sometimes I get this stuff and I don't click through. But I have a question for you about if you don't mind, a media, your opinion on since we're talking about the way media handles this stuff. If a couple of people mentioned, and I started to think maybe it was true, that Sandy Hook, for example, was just an absolute media feeding frenzy. It was insane and a terrible taste. Do you would you consider yourself having a, it's personally in bad taste to cover that? I mean, do you think the news should just avoid it completely or what?
They can't, and it's not a vast left-wing conspiracy so much as it is the fact that the unofficial motto of nearly every news agency is, and this is really disgusting to me, but it's if it bleeds, it leads. Have you ever heard that one?
Do you know, I just heard that for the first time, like, yesterday. I just can't believe it. Yeah, that's horrible.
Yeah, I just actually heard it because I'm trying to get, I mean, I've been doing audio media since 2006 and my show Freedom Fiends for 2 years, and we're about to get syndicated on some national radio stations. So I'm trying to like read up on stuff of like, you know, basically trying to go to J school, go to journalism school by reading books, you know, for a week.
Yes.
That's how I do things.
That.
So,
how to.
Yeah. And I'm reading like the NPR story editor's style guide. And I'm also reading some book on being a radio producer, not radio talk show host, but you know, I kind of wear all the hats. So, and I'm they're really interesting reads. I'll they're in the other room, but I'll give you the recommendation. If you want to see the titles of them, I'll send them to you. But
yeah,
you know, it's kind of like the talk show one is really good, and the NPR one is kind of really good, but really like, ugh, do you really have to use Cass Sunstein in your example? Come on, man, you're bumming me out.
Here's
my plan is in 3 years when the Freedom Fiends are the most popular talk radio show in the world. And, you know, Alex Jones is begging to get on our show and we'll see. Maybe we can fit you in.
I hope that's all true.
And, you know, and NPR wants to interview us and they interview us and they say, well, how did you become the most popular radio station or talk show in the world? I'm going to say, I read your book, you magnificent bastards.
Yeah. No, it's a shame. There are kernels of truth. Like you were talking about earlier, how, like, maybe Marx was an anarchist. I know you didn't want to get into that, and I won't, but I do find that a lot of times you get real insight from stuff that's radical, and if it's radical left, which you don't agree with, you kind of avoid those resources, but there's a lot of good stuff. You just have to have the tolerance to weed out the stuff that just drives you crazy. A lot of people can't do that, which is why I think people on the left and people on the right are kind of ill-informed, because they simply can't stand to read the other side stuff. But the other side, of course, has tons of truth in it, which is how they've convinced their side they're right.
Yeah, I think I actually got it backwards. Marx and Lenin, I get them confused. One of them was an anarchist, and the other was the guy who put it into action by telling people we need to remove the government, and then once he was in power, made a worse government.
Well, the problem with those kind of anarchists, the kind of left anarchists, I think in Spain they were called the syndicalist anarchists,
yeah,
as opposed to what we are, Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're a voluntarist. You're an anarchist. Are you an anarcho-capitalist, Michael? Are you a voluntarist?
I say that I'm a freedom fiend.
Are you a minarchist?
I'm a freedom fiend. I am not a minarchist. I do not believe that any government is ethical, and I do not believe that any government can do things well. I would fit under I would answer with a kind of to any of those titles, anarcho-capitalist, voluntarist. I'm not an agorist because I do pay my taxes and don't do any black market interchanges, but that's not for moral reason. It's more because I don't want to get thrown in prison.
Yeah, that's trouble. But I will say what's wrong with the other kind of anarchism, like the left anarchism. I think it cannot possibly work because, and they think that my side won't work because of this for the same reason, they don't believe in private property. And
right.
In my mind, you know, property is occupied, it's owned. So either you own it yourself or someone else owns it. And you can say it's collective, but it's not really because somebody's calling the shots. Then your shaman or whoever is your kind of decision maker, he's the guy. So unless you have private property, which in my mind is self-evident, like any little baby knows that the lollipop in his hand is his.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
yeah.
You know, so private property to me, which is self-evident, is the only way anarchism can really work, because that's what defines law. Don't touch me or my stuff. That's the law. You don't really need law to come from above to be written, because that's it. It's obvious. Where the other side of the anarchist spectrum, the lefties, I don't think they understand that there is absolutely no way for, there is no way to not have a government, because they are emasculating the only law, the only natural law. So that's, anyway, that was my opinion, is that I just think their way is impossible.
Yeah. I want to correct something if I misspoke. A lot of thoughts were flying around. I think I may have said, I'm not an anarchist. I am an anarchist. I'm not an agorist is what I meant to say. I don't know if I said that correctly or not.
No, you did. You said that. An agorist. And I always wondered what the difference was. And I don't know if this is too, theoretical, you don't want to get into it.
I'll get into it.
I didn't know what the agorist, what, I understand voluntarism. I understand, you know, I love anarcho-capitalism. I completely embrace that term and everything that I've ever read that what it means. From Hoppe to Rothbard to whatever. But the agorist, I guess I don't know what the distinction is. It sounds to me like they're, back to nature or
farmers.
Something?
That's why I hate all this terminology because, I mean, agorist sounds like farmers or, you know,
it really does.
Voluntarist sounds like you build Habitat for Humanity houses. Anarchist sounds like you have a beard and blow things up.
I know, but you can't give up the expressions that mean something.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you give up the ideas.
Well, my co-host and I say we are freedom fiends. That's the name of the cast, and that's what we call ourselves.
Yep.
We've made up our own term, and it's fiend, like, you know, street for fiend.
Yep.
because we don't like any of the other terms. And I do like using the word anarchist, and I like trying to, I wouldn't even say it's reclaiming it, because actually the syndicalists had that term first. It's a French word, and I can't pronounce it in French, but...
But it just means no arching government,
right,
as
right.
opposed to the poly... Or I read something by the church, I'm Catholic, and I read this thing from the Catholic Church calling for a polyarchic government, where you would have all the nations, all the states, all local government, everything, and then another one on top, like the world government is just another layer. So I think you have to accept the word anarchism as really just as a, like a scientific term. What I mean? It's just, it is what it is.
Have you read the book, Why Catholics Should Become Anarchists? I mean, libertarians?
No, and I think there's kind of two schools. A lot of Catholics are socialists, but there's this idea of subsidiarity in Catholicism, where the lowest level of control should have the most power, only have hierarchy if you absolutely need it. And that's a very libertarian principle, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm going to send you another...
Did you read that book?
But I've interviewed the guy who wrote it. I'm sending you a link to it right now. I interviewed him on the Anarchy Gumbo podcast. He's a buddy of mine, too. Randy England. He's an attorney from Oklahoma. He's an ex-prosecutor, and he is an anarchist. And he wrote a book called Why Catholic... He's a very strong Catholic... And he wrote a book called Why Catholics Should Become Libertarians. He didn't use the word anarchist because he didn't want to scare him. But, you know, and he and I talked a lot on there about how, you know, the teachings of Christ. I'm not Christian, but I went to Episcopal school for years and years and years. So I know it. I know the text.
You know,
a lot of Catholics take the charity of Jesus and turn it into so-called charity at the point of a gun through government. It's not the same thing, you know.
Totally wrong. As a matter of fact, I wanted, before I got this radio show, I wanted to write a book, and I was going to name it Jesus Was an Anarchist. And I Googled it just to make sure nobody beat me to it, and someone had. A guy named James Redford wrote, like, it wasn't a book, but it was like a 32-page essay explaining how, if you look at Jesus' activity, he was completely anti-state and quite possibly an anarchist, which makes perfect sense to me. But I do think that the concept of charity relies on it being voluntary. Otherwise, you're actually sinning because you're stealing, first of all, and second of all, the person who's giving, supposedly, at the other end of a gun, cannot possibly be giving freely, so they can't get the virtue. So you've got just a double vice there instead of a single virtue and a call to virtue, because there's a need, and the relationship breaks down when you insert force.
Yeah, there's a Dead Kennedy song too called Jesus Was a Terrorist, which is basically the idea that Christians should recognize that it's not a bad thing to criticize your government because Jesus criticized the government. There's a line in our movie Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. I interviewed this 64-year-old nurse who's never tried pot but thinks it should be legal, and she's a grandmother, and she walks around Wyoming open carrying a pistol, and she's kind of one of the people that...
Nice.
Her name's Mama Liberty. She helped turn me on to Liberty, and
nice.
She's kind of a hero of mine and a friend of mine, and she says in the movie, Jesus was put to death for challenging the government, and when you think about that, that's absolutely true. And
the government's cronies.
Yeah, and any government, any Christian who thinks you're bad because you're criticizing Obama, or you're criticizing the government, or you're an anarchist.
Right.
Just tell him, man, Jesus was killed by the government for challenging the government. He was
through the democratic process.
Right, right. He was legally
through the democratic
he
process.
Was
they
legally
voted.
Killed.
The crowd voted.
Yeah, he was legally killed. There was, you know, a trial of sorts.
Yes,
and
Socrates also
and
through democracy
and
by the state.
He was arrested by officers just following orders and killed.
Yeah.
You know, killed by military and police who were doing their job. So there.
Yeah. with the consent of the governed, decided, and Socrates the exact same thing. Socrates was killed by the state through a vote. The democratic process. The two greatest people who ever lived on Earth, arguably.
Yeah. That's so square, man. So square.
Mm-mm.
Yep.
So did we cover, think that offended anybody? Hope not. I don't like to offend people when it comes to religion because I respect it. I just feel like it's very important to really examine the principles of things. And I feel that way about that politics also. That's really an ethical question. And I think people forget that you have to consult yourself first. And I think that's happening, let's say, in the Republican Party, which is, people trusted them. They said, we're going to betray all of your principles, but we're going to win. and they didn't win. And now people are saying, okay, well, I think I might want to figure out what my principles are and just stick to them, because if I'm going to lose, I don't want to also go to hell.
Yeah, I mean, Ron Paul was such a classic good conservative in the pure sense of the word. And I mean, they cheated and did illegal and immoral things to get him to have no chance.
Yeah, I feel like he was closer to Barry Goldwater and Thomas Jefferson than anyone I've been aware of in my lifetime.
Yeah, except unlike Barry Goldwater, he didn't want to nuke Vietnam. And unlike Jefferson, he didn't own people.
That is true. He's got him beat on both counts.
Yeah, I remember. I don't know if you remember the ads. I don't think I'm old enough to have seen them on TV when I was a kid. But did you ever see the ad that made Goldwater lose? That was put out by LBJ.
Oh yeah, the little girl picking daisies.
Yeah.
My father used to tell me about that, and I think I've seen it.
It's on YouTube. It's on YouTube.
I wasn't. Yeah, but my father used to say that. I think they ran it like the day before the election. That would have changed the course of history, but over time, no matter who has been elected to kind of save the day, eventually the day is lost. You know what I mean? Like, you just can't have a monopoly coercive government defend individual liberty. It's just, in the long run, you're going to have a Ron Paul, even a Barry Goldwater, perfect or imperfect, but you're really not going to be able to hold your ground forever. And that's why we have the biggest government in the history of the world. And we started out with the smallest.
Yeah. It's such a drag, man.
I know.
Square.
What a wasted opportunity.
It's just, the word square just keeps coming up in my mind. Those people are so square, man.
No, and there's nothing you can do about it. I feel like it was a great opportunity. I understand there were many horrible injustices, but we might have overcome them and redeemed ourselves if the experiment had actually worked. But it was a failure, a horrible failure. I think we will end up being... See, this is where you get like that Marxist writing, which, of course, I absolutely am the opposite of Marx in my respect for private property. But sometimes I read this great book called Straight Power Concepts in the Middle East. It ends up, the guy, like you can tell, he's a Marxist. But he talks about American imperialism and colonialism. And it's true, you know, it's historically correct, but you reject a lot of that stuff because it comes from the Marxist side.
Well, and those people don't see a difference between corporatism and corporatism and capitalism.
And capitalism, very good, exactly right. That's exactly what I think. And they really convince people that, you know, people don't understand it anymore at all. Like they dominate the message so well. That's why I don't like to give up my terms. Like, anarcho-capitalist is a crazy expression, but I won't give it up, because you give up the ideas when you give up the expression.
Yeah, and the people that dilute it make it kind of like make our job harder. I mean, Stossel is a perfect example. Like, I'm glad Stossel exists. I'm glad he's on mainstream TV, but he doesn't have it 100% right. And he kind of ends up being like an apologist for IBM and big business and all these things that are reinforced by government, you know? And he's called a libertarian. Yeah. I also answer to libertarian. I think you can be a libertarian and an anarchist.
Yeah.
And to answer your question about what agorism is, we never followed that one up. Agorism isn't a worldview the way that agorism is not a worldview the way that anarchism is, or minarchism, or Republican, or, you know, any of those flavors.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Agorism is a strategy, and you could be, and most agorists are anarcho-capitalists. It's basic, but you could be a Marxist and be an agorist, or you could be a Republican or a Democrat. Probably not, because it basically involves breaking the law. The idea of agorism is starve the state by conducting as many business, as many monetary exchanges as you can off the books. That's agorism pretty much in a nutshell. And I don't know why it has such a fruity name. It was invented in the 70s by a guy who really liked Dungeons and Dragons. So that's the only thing I could think of.
Are you kidding?
No.
No.
Oh, that is funny.
I know.
But to see, so wait a second. Are they off the grid? I mean, do they have generators and stuff?
They could. That would be a good agorist strategy. But a lot of them basically just, you know, I don't know. I've been taken to task for taking them to task before. I've done a lot of critique of saying that a lot of, not a lot of them, but enough of them that I've noticed it. I think aren't doing it right, because what a lot of them do is beg for a living, cyber beg. And that is not a way to have a government, I mean, a governmentless situation, you know. There's nothing immoral. There's nothing immoral about begging. No. It's kind of distasteful to me, but it's, a lot of them just, you know, not a lot of them, but enough that I've noticed it, you know, couch surf for a living, don't want to work, beg, cyber beg, get into a lot of emergency situations where they're like, hey, I need this amount of money now. Please, everyone help me out. You know, I blocked all those people on Twitter. I don't, anyone that does that a lot, I'm like, you're not being immoral, but you're really bugging the hell out of me.
Yeah. The strategy isn't scalable. So I always think that about Eastern religion versus Western religion.
Yeah,
you can't sit on the corner begging for rice. Everyone cannot do that. I understand it's a peaceful way to go, but the work ethic of the Protestants is the one that would actually feed people.
To be clear, agorism is not a strategy of begging. That's not.
No, I understand. I know
agorists who beg. But the strategy is not scalable in the current system. It's definitely workable for, like, if what you do is sell weed or gold for a living, but it's not workable if you create car engines or have a factory, you know?
Yes. I always thought that, the only way to avoid taxes is to do something really bad, you know, really illegal. And I thought, no wonder those guys are so rich. They don't even, not only are the prices of their things through the roof, but they don't pay taxes. It's double everything.
Well, I've always joked that a lot of rappers, if they would discover the non-aggression principle, would instantly become perfect anarchists or voluntarists or libertarians, because, okay, they like selling drugs for a living, they like carrying guns, and they like gold. You know, they like gold chains. So,
yes.
I mean, you know, they're not that different from us. And actually, there's a rapper I really like, Lupe Fiasco, who somehow got booked in one of the secondary stages for Obama's coronation today and got thrown off the stage by either security or the Secret Service for basically calling Obama a terrorist. And he is a black rapper from Chicago. That's probably why they booked him, but they didn't listen to him. I mean, he's got a song like Glenn Beck is a racist, so-and-so is a racist, but Obama's worse because he's killing lots of brown kids or something like that.
Wow. Did you ever see, was it in Endgame? Do you ever see any of those Alex Jones movies?
I like Alex Jones and I like that he exists, but he scares the hell out of me. And I like to be happy and mellow. So, and I know that,
you
know.
Yeah, there's a lot of hype.
No.
There's a lot of hype there. But he does have a rapper on there, like KR or whatever. KR ain't buying it. He kept saying.
KRS-One. KRS-One.
Yeah, that's it. And he kept saying, it's like you can see behind the curtain. And people can see behind the curtain, but boy, you get pushed out of, I think, entertainment and any kind of high profile position if you don't toe the party line.
So let's go hear some words from our sponsors and we'll be right back for the redemption in the third act.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get State Speech is Hate Speech, Anarchy Gumbo, Guns and Weed, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. When you're not busy spying on your neighbors or squinting at everyone, tell anyone who will listen why more government is a good thing. You'll get a warm and fuzzy feeling demanding more taxes and arguing in favor of gun control while militarizing our police, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
That is so square. Check out the additional Freedom Fiend show, Freedom Fiends Live, every Sunday on the LRN.FM streaming feed or satellite radio.
Broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker inside a mountain near an undisclosed location in the rural Wild West of the occupied states of America.
Freedom Fiends Live expands on the Fiend's weekly Wednesday podcasts, but now we're kicking the hornet's nest live. Talk back to the back talkers every Sunday from 5 to 7 p.m. East Coast time. From the makers of Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. Freedom Fiends Live. Call in soon before we get droned. All right. This is the Anarchy Gumbo show.
Great. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being had. I make that joke with everybody. So,
okay, go for it.
So I have to ask a question that is so like embarrassingly cliche that I'm embarrassed to ask it, but I have to ask it. You're a Catholic and an anarchist. How do you feel about abortion?
Well, I'm an anarchist, so it is tricky. I mean, I go with Rothbard, Murray Rothbard, who basically revealed anarcho-capitalism, which I consider to be self-evident, but he saw it. And he addresses that question. First of all, it's not necessary because we're a rich enough society that you really don't need to have that. So I really feel like most of it would go away if we had a kind of a different attitude. I think that deinstitutionalizing orphans and people with Down syndrome, I have a son with Down syndrome, but when they deinstitutionalized everybody in the 60s, people have no, if they can't handle the kid, they can't do, there's nothing they can do with it. So I feel like there's a lot of social reasons why abortion is really prevalent. But ultimately, the answer is that you would have no standing as another person to go in and stop a woman from having an abortion. There are competing rights. There's the woman's right and the baby's right. Unlike gay marriage, where it's nobody's right. You know, nobody's right to stop you.
And how can people not see those different angles? Those two things you just described perfectly in one sentence. You know, abortion is two competing property right issues, the mother and the child. And gay marriage is nobody's damn business except the people involved. Yeah.
I know. And I think with the rights, I understand. I think ultimately the question is, Rothbard says that the baby is trespassing on the mother, even though she invited him. And so if somebody came over your house and you didn't want them there, you could throw them out. But you couldn't actually kill them. You know what I mean? So.
Well, you could if they would. You could if they wouldn't leave. If they threatened you, yeah,
if they couldn't leave, if all of a sudden they became paralyzed on your couch and you really had to feed them and like you were snowed in, I don't think you'd be able to starve them to death legally. I mean, I really don't think so. So it's a very subtle thing, but I would have to err. And if you look at the Constitution, I do believe that a citizen is a person born.
Although, does that matter, or are you just talking about how it should be in the law of the land?
No, I'm just saying that, you know, depending on how you look at it, who has the right? This woman is a person. I don't know anything about what's going on inside her body. As an anarchist, you would maybe save a child who was being beaten to death in front of you. You can go in there and snatch that child away, but you couldn't really save this child without being violent on the mother, and does she have a right to do what she wants? It's too tricky. You really have to err on the side of not interfering. I think it's immoral. I think it's immoral. I will not say it's not immoral, but to say that you had the right to stop her from doing it, I can't say that. And because I can't say that, you know, and plus you ultimately, a lot of it is a moral question in that if you don't believe in a soul, if you don't believe in an afterlife, if you don't believe in the sanctity of life, then really that baby has no existence. In a kind of metaphysical sense. And so a person who is totally atheistic might not recognize what I see to be the right to life of that child. And so then to me, it becomes a question of church versus state. And then you have to be taking the side of the church to say that that is a law.
So
it's a religious question. And then all of a sudden you're making it a legal question.
So to dumb that answer down for statists,
do you think
abortion should be legal or not?
I have to say, I think there would be no way of enforcing it if it were illegal. You would not be permitted to stop the woman.
Man, statists can't understand answers like that, and I love it. And I didn't mean to like say, I wasn't saying your answer was too intricate. It was great, but it was kind of like, it answered the question to me, but I don't know that it would have answered, say, to my dad.
Well, first of all, you have to overturn Roe versus Wade, because Roe versus Wade says that you have to have a law that allows abortion in every single municipality. So if you want to talk about government and state, this question has to be answered at the most local level. It's this concept of subsidiarity in Christianity and Catholicism, where something like that, which is, you're talking about a crime, you know, are you going to make that a crime? Is it murder? Or if you're going to stop people with your police force, are you going to put them in jail? It has to be an extremely local question. And so if you're an anarchist, you are still going to have a local organization. And as an anarchist, you can have a community that does not permit that, that would exile the person who would do that. You know what I'm saying? So you would have to make that, if you were going to make abortion illegal, it would have to be at the most local possible level, where it was as close to being a consensual thing, an agreement, as you could. Does that make sense?
I think so.
You don't like it?
No, I like it a lot.
It's not good enough.
No, it is good. It's not really a binary answer, which I guess is what you're showing here. And I like the at the most local level, and I like the rather than punished by throwing in a cage, I like to punish by, you know, be gone, unclean, leave our place.
We can't live with you because we really think that's so wrong, but we also can't harm you violently because you didn't harm any of us.
Here's what I think, though.
We can't retaliate.
I mean, you're talking about taking it down to the smallest government level, to like a tribe or a town or a neighborhood or a county or a something smaller than a county.
Yeah.
I really think that the only ethical division to take it down to is the individual, or at least to a household.
Yeah.
You know, my wife and I think as one on practically every issue, and we own everything jointly because we've agreed to, not because the state tells us to. So I would say you'd have to take it down to, you know, where the fence goes around my house. And nobody,
the only person
that could shun me from that would be my wife, and she wouldn't. So
put it that way, you see that the problem probably wouldn't really even exist, because at a certain level, your social pressures kind of go away. So unless you're actually impoverished, you could probably live with it. You know what I'm saying? Like I think that if you have the prosperity that this earth really is capable of providing to the 7 billion people who live here, and if we accepted the basic tenet that you really don't do harm to innocent people, and if you can live with it, you know, if you have the charity to give, then I think you would probably welcome the child.
Go ahead.
Yeah, as the smaller the level you go, the more you can deal with the problem in whatever way you think is morally correct.
I like that.
I agree with you that it's individual. It's so hard for me because, you know, my mother used to take me down to march against Roe versus Wade. Like, she's going to be on her bucket list. She's 84 on Friday. I am going to go pick her up from San Francisco, where she is going for this big march on life, and she prays down the rosary. She gets arrested. I don't do that. Like, I think Roe versus Wade should be overturned because these are questions that are generally handled by the state and local level, and they should be. But it's just a very difficult question, and that's why I think that you want it to be, if you're going to have a democracy, you want to make it at the smallest level. And if it's in your house or whatever, or maybe it's just a question between you and God,
and
or
that,
nobody.
And that answer, that answer was wonderful, and it was really long. And most people, most people can't wrap their head around that things aren't binary. You know, almost everybody has an opinion really strongly binary, absolute, yay or nay,
especially on that issue.
On abortion. Yeah. And most people, regardless of which side of that they were on, if they were in the room when I asked you that question, about a third of the way through it, they would have interrupted you and said, yeah, but how do you feel? You know?
No. I'm sorry, but you know, ethical issues that are really intense like that, really moral issues, there actually aren't too many that I really still struggle with.
I think
really
abortion's the only one that anarchists can really discuss differences on.
Yeah, immigration is a little tricky too, and I'll tell you why. Some people think that if you are going to have national boundaries, national borders, and you have high taxes, that immigrants are free riders on what you were forced to pay for.
Well, the Ron Paul answer to that is remove every bit of government funding to everybody, you know, from corporate welfare to individual welfare to, you know, American union subsidies to everything. And I agree.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I mean,
but I do think that is the only other issue that I feel like is really where it depends on other factors.
I guess the reason I interrupted you at one point and said, why are you quoting the Constitution on this? You're an anarchist. And I do notice that you talk about the Constitution on your show, and we do sometimes on our show too. And as a pure anarchist, I absolutely don't believe in the Constitution. However, yeah, I'm enough of a realist to realize that I live in a country that is allegedly founded on, you know, the law is founded on it. And it may be the only protection I have someday when I'm, you know, thrown in jail for speaking on a microphone, which is the only thing I could be arrested for, that or guns, which, yes, you know.
I'm afraid of that also. And I don't think you'd be arrested for speaking on the microphone. You'd be arrested for pot in your trunk, you know what I mean?
They pot in your trunk that wasn't yours, yeah.
No,
yeah.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, they would figure out a way to do away with you, which is why I'm afraid of the surveillance state, because then they can find anything that you've ever done wrong, and if they don't like what you're saying, they put you in jail for a tax glitch.
Well, I have cameras. I have my own surveillance state. I have cameras all over the inside of my house, so if someone breaks in, I'm going to know it.
It would be nice if you could count on that, but I have no faith. But I would like to answer the constitutional question, if you don't mind.
What I wanted to say real quick was what I usually do when I'm giving the anarchist answer and then giving the Constitution answer, to make them separate so people don't think I'm mixing them together, is I say, well, now I'm going to put on my minarchist hat. And that's for our listeners who aren't yet anarchists, who still believe in the Constitution as this sacred thing handed down by God that needs to be upheld, even though it hasn't existed since about a year after it was written, in a lot of ways.
Right.
You know, I mean, the people that signed it violated it within a year or two. But so
I think a lot of
Monica, why don't you put on your minarchist hat and tell us how you think.
Yes, well, I'll just tell you why I refer to the Constitution. It's this. As you can tell from our conversation, this anarcho-capitalism thing and these ideas are really big ideas. They're deep ideas. They're subtle. They're different. People aren't, they can't, it's hard to understand. And I forgive me if I did make things hard to understand. But the Constitution, it emerged in the Age of Enlightenment. It had to pay lip service to those ideas of individual liberty, even though it was, in my opinion, a scam that set us up for this big government, thanks to Alexander Hamilton.
Have you read Hologram of Liberty by Boston Tea Party?
No, you're really throwing stuff at me. I read a lot.
That book is pretty much where that theory comes from that you're mentioning, or at least it's extrapolated and explored very deeply many years ago in that book.
Yeah, no, I think it's, well, Albert J. Nock in his 88-page Our Enemy, the State, in like one paragraph is like, yeah, it was a fight between Patrick Henry and the agriculturalists and Alexander Hamilton and the merchant class of who was really going to dominate the future of this country. It was like, it was a cronyist question from the beginning. But it did pay lip service to what are really libertarian ideas. And it's very simple, it's easy to understand, and we've all been nurtured on it. So when I talk to my audience, which is people driving home in their car, you know, these are not people who are seeking out the anarcho-capitalist idea or the libertarian idea. And I just like, I find it, they can understand the ideas if I refer to them as a kind of touchstone in the Constitution. You know that the right to life or the, you know, pursuit of happiness or freedom of speech, these things that we already accept to be self-evident rights. And I feel like it's the easiest way for people to access the ideas that we're talking about now is if they have that kind of ready-made framework, which they've been, you know, kind of indoctrinated with.
Word. Worms, as we say in the Freedom Fiends. Worms. That's good. Worms. So, how did you get a radio show? How did they let you on the radio?
That is such a great question. I still marvel at that. I was so desperate to exchange ideas with people about this stuff because it was like, it was just an epiphany for me. As soon as I realized like what it was all about, it's like, oh my gosh, don't you know what's really happening in the world? Oh my gosh, oh my gosh. I read this book, Democracy, the God That Failed by Hans Hermann Hoppe. It's on Mises.org. But I had already noticed that the American experiment had failed. So I was just bursting. And every time I talked to anybody halfway intelligent, I would just lay this stuff on them and buy them the book. I must have given 30 books out. And people would really almost always look at me like I had three heads, but I kept trying. And I was sitting next to the producer of Clark Howard, who's a big syndicated radio host whose basis is in Atlanta. I was at a wedding sitting next to his producer, and I said, oh, you have to tell Clark about this Democracy, the God That Failed. He's going to get it. The whole system is just a fraud, blah, 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 blah. And I just bombarded this woman for like 2 hours, exactly like I'm doing to you right now. And she just said, could you do that if there was nobody here looking at you? Could you do it just like facing a wall? And I said, yeah. And she said, because nobody can talk like that. I was like, oh, okay. She's like, yeah, I'm going to put you in front of a microphone. I don't think she cared exactly what I was saying about the, she liked the ideas, but she didn't care if they were right or wrong. She just felt like if you can talk and if you've got an idea or something, you know, if the content is deep enough, then people will listen to it, even if they don't agree with you. And she just thought it was engaging, and she helps me. She's my producer, Krista. And it's, they don't care. They don't, they, you know, you think there's some conspiracy to keep these ideas down. They don't care about the content, as long as it's interesting and applicable to current events.
Which is, you know, which is why, which is why I don't buy the liberal complaint that, that there's no, you know, the talk radio is dominated by right wingers. The thing is, that's not a vast right-wing conspiracy. The people programming want talkers people will listen to. Yeah, and the thing is, the reason there aren't liberals on radio is liberals suck at talk radio. And I hate Rush Limbaugh, but he's really good at what he does, at just talking and stirring people up. And that's what program directors want. I mean, I had the same thing in rock and roll. I was signed to Warner Brothers, and it's like they didn't care what our songs were about. You know, they didn't care what anything about us, just that you know, we they thought they could sell us. And, you know, Air America failed not because the right wing cut them down, but because nobody wanted to listen to that, even liberals.
Because I have an answer. The conservatism is a like a whatever, left brain thing. It's intellectual. Whereas the liberal side is emotional, it's feeling, and you can't really talk about that. And I actually have an agent, and he said, look, you sound kind of like a liberal sometimes. You got to be a conservative to be on the radio. And I said, no, you don't. You just can't be just an emo liberal that doesn't have the depth of content. Libertarianism is actually deeper than conservatism in that way, because the principles keep going. Like I said at the beginning of our conversation, but now, like, neoconservatives insert these preferences about what they want the world to look like, about what they want you to do in your bedroom and in your lungs and stuff. But libertarians, there is no question that you don't have an actual rational, logical argument for, which is why it is a talking sport.
A talking sport. It's a talking. So. It's a contact talking sport.
It really is, and I think whereas the liberal thing, it's more like just. Yeah, can you believe how bad those people are? They just have no heart.
Yeah.
You can't really say that for 24 hours straight.
I mean, that's a lot of what right-wing radio is, too. And whereas the very few libertarian and anarcho-capitalist radio shows out there tend to be more about true morality and the economics of everything. And there's really no way to argue it, but both the Republicans and the Democrats seem to find a way to. Speaking of which, what kind of pushback have you had from listeners, and what kind of support have you had from listeners?
I really expected the conservative listeners to give me a really hard time. And in the beginning, when I was first on, I did get a lot of that, like, let me tell you, honey, you're really wrong about this. You know, the old guys are really condescend to me. And I think because I always had an answer for them, because it is such a rich body of work, they kind of stopped calling. I just noticed that this week. I said, you know, why don't I get those pushback calls anymore? And I didn't know if I had just converted everyone, which I don't really want to convert. I just want to converse. But I didn't know if they just, you know, started to think maybe they weren't going to just school me. But I don't get as much pushback. As a matter of fact, we kind of like to have a little bit of debate on the air because it makes it interesting. It brings out the point. So I'll ask questions like, call me if you disagree. And I'll tell you, it's hard to get those calls. I think people are so starving for what you and I are talking about, for the libertarian viewpoint, that they just are eating it up, and they swamp my lines. And in agreement, I talked about the surveillance state last week. I thought people were going to call and tell me that I was paranoid, and every single person, like, you know, called to say, yes, it's terrifying. Yes, I applied for a pilot's license, and they gave me the third degree for like 4 hours. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
It's worse than I thought.
I mean, there have been some real trailblazers for this, and your show wouldn't have been possible on that kind of station 10 years ago.
I think that's probably right. I mean, just there wasn't enough of an audience.
Yeah.
The audience, in my mind, is exploding now that the Republicans have completely violated their core principles and totally went down in a ball of flames.
Yeah, I mean, 15, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, you know, the John Birch Society were publishing newsletters that got it three quarters right and one quarter wrong.
Definitely.
And, you know, 15 years ago, there were some people doing shortwave radio talk show kind of stuff about these issues, but none of them were ever really completely ethical. Like, all I've heard recordings of them. There's some on YouTube, and like a lot of them started with like, "Hello, patriots, God bless America and the Constitution," who, you know, and the God who wrote it. And I'm like, okay, you sort of half get it, a quarter maybe, you know, whereas like Republicans now, a couple years ago, I said they were in a 10th measures. Now I think they're just about 200 degrees in the wrong direction.
Yeah, I've had it with them. But Ron Paul, how much do we owe to Ron Paul?
He's great, man. I look at him as a philosopher more than a politician.
Oh, yeah. I think that's his goal. I think he has said he just wanted to make sure the ideas were out there so that when the crisis came, people would be ready with an alternative to this idea that the only answer is more government, like Europe. Europe's more government has driven them into the ground, and the only thing they're being offered is more government.
Yeah, and you know, about 20 years ago or 10 years ago, people made fun of the Libertarian Party and said, you know, they've never gotten anyone elected anything higher than dog catcher. Ron Paul is basically a Libertarian Party member who switched over to the Republican Party and still is a Libertarian and way more of a Libertarian than most Libertarian Party members and definitely the people they run. They run people who are – they ran Howard Stern, and he ran – under the Libertarian Party, under a platform of like death penalty for speeders or something like that. I mean, it was
yeah, he's still libertarian.
Yeah, he's so not libertarian. I mean, he may like porn and pot, but that does not a libertarian make.
No, I have a secret theory that Ron Paul is an anarcho-capitalist, and Rand Paul called me once for a campaign contribution, and I just was on some list of donors.
He called you, or his people called you?
He called me, like his Rand? Somebody called me and said, "Can you hold on the line for Dr. Paul?" Because
oh, Ron Paul, which doctor, Ron or Rand?
Rand. So I used to be a banker, and
wow, you
I
got
Harvard club.
So you got panhandled by Rand Paul. That is so cool.
Yes,
that's
personally.
So agorist.
I know. I said to him, "I'm sitting on. I'm in the aisle in Target. My daughter. I'm in the crayon aisle. My daughter's like, you know, throwing." Jujubes at me and stuff like that. My hair is like got a bone in it. I'm in flip flops. The phone rings and it's some woman saying, "Can you hold for Dr. Paul?" And I was like, "Okay, I'm waiting." And I thought to myself, I'm normally just dumb as bricks, and I'm just like, "Gee, why is Rand Paul calling me?" And I was like, "He must want money," which I didn't have to give him. But I said, so I thought to myself, "What am I going to say? I've got, you know, I've got probably 30 seconds to talk to this guy." And I was like, "Yes." So I said to him, and he got on the phone, and I said, "I just want to tell you, your father's the only one who gives me hope in Washington. He's the only, in for thousands of years, you know, people have looked for one honest man."
Well,
he's
the only, he's the only honest politician America's ever had. And I would include Jefferson in that, too. I mean, Jefferson owned people. Yeah, man.
But I said, to Rand Paul, it's like, "But I have to tell you, your father defends the Constitution, but I don't think he buys it. I think he's an anarcho-capitalist like I am." And I totally thought Rand Paul was going to be like, "Oh, you outed him. You're right." And he was just like, "I'm having a party, and I was wondering if you could come to my party." And I was just like, "Oh, forget it. It's useless." So I did not get Rand Paul to admit that Ron Paul was an anarcho-capitalist, but I still think so.
Well, and Rand Paul probably said, "Yes, he is, but shh." That's probably what he was thinking.
Yeah,
and,
no,
you know, and he's not. He's not an anarcho-capitalist, Rand Paul.
Rand Paul, no, he isn't. But he's 80% there. I mean, I goofed on him for endorsing Romney, but but the problem is if he got elected, then he wouldn't really be able to implement the total overhaul that was necessary, and it might discredit the ideas because they'd say, "Look, see, it didn't work anyway."
No, and I'd like to go another 20 minutes if you got time, do you?
Okay, sure.
Okay, let's go sell some stuff here, and we'll be right back on Anarchy Gumbo Podcast.
Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
Six drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies!
Jesus.
On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadavi.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
You're listening to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. That proves you're smarter than most people. Did your world collapse when Ron Paul didn't win? Don't keep hoping for some great man to fix government through government. Complete your evolution today to full-on anarcho-capitalist. Reward your brain with the freedom fiends and quit breaking your heart with some politician. While the libertarians argue,
but who would build the roads?
The freedom fiends have already built the roads and moved on to making the great media content of the libertarian paradise. Freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
So, Monica Perez, I just sent you a link to a blog post I wrote called Ron Paul Comes Out as an Anarchist that I wrote. When was that? It was when he gave his speech to Congress and basically said, "You suck, you suck, you suck, you're cool, you suck, I'm out of here." To paraphrase a
the farewell speech?
Yeah, to paraphrase a movie. Yeah, when was that? It was a while back.
That was, but, I think, in October.
Yeah, and I just, November 14th, and I just sent you our Freedom Fiends blog post about that.
Awesome. I can't wait. And I want to watch your movie.
Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom?
Yeah.
Mama Liberty's in that. The lady that, my adopted grandmother.
Gun-toting grandma?
In Wyoming. Yeah. Yep. So, awesome. What was your journey to anarchy?
Well, I'll tell you. I was living in California in 2008.
That's what did it for me, too.
It was just all those Soviet style Obama posters, and I was like, are people buying this? And I said, this whole experiment is just not working out. And I thought, well, if this experiment wasn't working out, no experiment's going to work out. And I have to say, I felt totally liberated by the idea that we were not going to, that there's nothing you can do, that we're just destined for servitude and there was nothing you can do. And I gave up completely on government and everything. And I was looking up a book on the Great Depression by Murray Rothbard, who I didn't know was Mr. Anarchy. And the book was recommended to me by my uncle, who was a Catholic priest, who founded an organization in D.C. called the Religious Coalition for a Moral Drug Policy, which was all like priests, rabbis, ministers and stuff who were for the decriminalizing of all drugs.
Nice.
So I should have known that this guy was going to send me in the right direction. And while I was Googling around for that, I saw this podcast for Hans Hermann Hoppe, who was a student of Rothbard. It was on lewrockwell.com, and it was called Democracy, the God That Failed. And I thought, geez, is it possible that somebody else thought of this? And he did. He thought he totally agreed that this idea that coercive monopoly government can protect individual liberty, preserve it, is impossible. But then he pointed out, which was a complete revelation to me, that society is self-ordering, capitalist society, where you have to trade to live. You have to cooperate with each other, even if you hate each other, even if you are a totally vicious person, a person of, you know, an untrustworthy person. You have to engage in contracts. You have to build trust. You have to find somebody to buy and sell your stuff. It just doesn't work for everyone to just steal from each other. It's just not going to work. So we get along. We get security guards. We build roads. That's what you do. So capitalism gave the surplus that made government come down from the trees and suck it off us, instead of what people think, like government was raiding down at the bottom of the trees with farms and stuff, and it coerced us, you know, incited us down to come farm and everything. It was the opposite. We first ordered society, and then government came out as parasites. And once I saw that, then there was no turning back. And then I kind of gave up, but then I just like, oh, well, there's nothing we're going to do for a long time. But I feel like the liberty movement is gaining steam and awakening. People are more and more interested in these these ideas that require that you pull away your social conditioning and really have an open mind. And it's amazing the response that I've gotten, and I think you probably have too.
Yeah. We're calling it the Liberty Mission now, not the Liberty Movement, right?
Oh, okay. I don't know. I'm so bad. I'm so not trendy.
Well,
I don't keep up on things.
The cool kids are calling it the Liberty Mission.
You know, I am always devoted to not changing names. I actually do not like this. I don't like to give in to this movement, this thing from the left where they always take over the names, like liberal.
Yeah, yeah.
We were classical liberals. You know, they have nothing to do with liberty. They shouldn't be called liberals, but we gave up on that. I refuse. I'm going to be an anarcho-capitalist, as crazy as it sounds.
All
but
right.
I'll say Liberty Mission. I'm not really, okay. I don't know if I'm considered a part of the liberty movement. I always feel like that is a little bit of the, you know, yellow flag with the snake on it.
That's why I like Liberty Mission better, because Liberty Movement sounds like, you know, there's dues and meetings or something and rules to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little bit different. I know that, like, the Tea Party, my mom's a Tea Partier, and she explains to me that the Tea Party broke in two, so that now there's one half that's, like, still just about taxes, but the other half that really got co-opted by the neoconservatives, so now they care about social issues, they care about dominating other regions of the world, and I think that's the problem. They get infiltrated.
Yeah. I could go on and on about that, but it's depressing, and I'm happy, and we're having a good talk, so let's not talk about those people. My dad's a Tea Party guy too. My dad called me today depressed. He's 91 and he still lives with takes care of himself and still works, actually, you know, part time, which is pretty amazing.
Wow.
Yeah, 91, man. And he was depressed today, and he is never depressed. And he was depressed about Obama's coronation and really depressed that he has four kids. I'm one of his kids, and the other three were all happy about Obama getting a second term. And it really depressed
my
father.
What's wrong with those people?
I don't know, man.
Crazy.
I don't know.
I mean,
not
that Romney would have really changed the course of history or anything, but it's depressing either way you look at it.
I mean, it's depressing to the point that if I described the true fatalism to my other three siblings, they would probably turn me into Department of Homeland Security because they'd think I'm unstable. I mean, if I said to them, you know, most of Obama's supporters and Obama himself and most of his cabinet literally want to kill our father and me. And they'd be like, you're crazy. And I'm like, no, we own guns and we don't want to give them up. They want to kill us for that. Literally. They wouldn't get it.
I think it's very sinister when you think about kind of the big picture and how they really, you know, you're talking about killing people. This environmental movement, I think, is an offshoot of this old zero population movement where people like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett and Ted Turner and stuff actually want to reduce the total population of Earth from 7 billion to like 2 billion.
You're getting into Alex Jones territory, but go on.
It's true, though. I mean, they say it. They say it.
Okay. Yeah, they do.
So I'm just saying that
like, what I'd say to them is, what's your plan? How do you hope to accomplish that? And they give a lot of, kind of think tanky white paper answers of like, well, through education and laws and encouragement and taxation of things we don't like. And, you know, but it basically comes down to, we want to kill you because there's too many of you.
Well, too many to control. They act like there's too many to live on Earth, but they're not. I mean, look, we're all here. It's totally fine. And there's a great book called The Skeptical Environmentalist that demonstrates how the Earth could actually sustain 14 billion people, and the population will peak out at 11. I'm sorry, I don't want to go off track on you, but I just feel like they actually do have this idea about human life. That's why I really get sensitive about the abortion issue. Why, not sensitive like I'm personally, but why it's a difficult question to nail down, because I think you cannot abandon this idea that human beings, you know, that there's a sanctity of life, because if you're purely humanist, purely like secular humanist, and think of it as kind of the maximum number of people to be helped is worth, you know, infringing on the rights of other people, I think you really lose the ability to be a defendant of individual liberty. You know, do you know what I'm saying? Like, you just have to believe that each individual is as valuable as all individuals together. And that's why I think that you have things like, you know, the healthcare, they can be okay with euthanasia and stuff like that, because there's no, they don't feel like every single solitary life needs to be respected, that there's a greater good. And I just think that's totally contrary to the libertarian principle.
Well, a lot of collectivists talk long and hard about how they believe in individual rights and minority rights. And who was it? I believe it was Ayn Rand, who I don't really like quoting her because I have some issues with her, but I like a lot of what she says.
She hates libertarians. Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
Call them hippies from the right.
But she said something about the smallest minority is the individual, and that's who minority rights should be for.
That is a good one. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I haven't gone off and joined the Free State Project in New Hampshire, there's a Free State Wyoming Project in Wyoming, and I'm not a member. Part of it is, to be a Marxist, to quote, not Karl Marx, but the comedian Marx, he said, I wouldn't join any club that would have me as a member. But also just, I'm not a joiner. My wife's not a joiner. But basically what it comes down to is we are a nation of two. I mean, we don't have a lot of friends. We don't want a lot of friends. I sit around and talk to the world on the internet all day. It's kind of basically like just being in my man cave, but inviting the world in selectively over a microphone is how I look at it. But,
and it's like-minded people, which is fun. You can take your friends because you can reach out specifically. It's really nice. That's why I like Twitter. Like I don't like Facebook.
I left Facebook completely and wrote a ranting article about why everyone else should do it too. I had 2,020 friends on there, and it was a great promotional tool for my media, and I split because I couldn't stand it. And I'm on Twitter. It's a lot more manageable, man.
Oh, okay. I don't mean to diss it for people who like it. It just doesn't appeal to me. I'm just not that personal.
Well, that was,
I like ideas.
That was one of my things. The other thing was just, while the government is surveilling everything everyone does, they're really heavily surveilling Facebook. Really heavily. Way more than Twitter or anything
else. Yeah, it's almost like it's a front for that solely. I did my whole show last week, Sunday, was on the surveillance state and how they are actually building, if you ever see that show, Person of Interest, they actually are building that where they can, in that show, they have a machine that can recognize your face and your gait and everything from every single camera that's out there. And there is a goal by a non-governmental organization that totally works for the government, in my opinion, called Trapwire, which was revealed by WikiLeaks.
Is it Tripwire?
They are doing that.
Trapwire, yeah.
You know about that? They actually are doing that. 24/7 individual identification, and it freaks me out. But I think it's hopeless to get to defeat. So I'm not paranoid anymore. I used to want to keep a low profile, and then I just thought, well, once you start talking on the radio, I think the Fusion Center is flagging you.
Yeah, one thing that I've been trying to encourage a lot of people to do, and me and my team, I guess I'd say, have written some very detailed and excellent tutorials on it, is doing a PGP encrypted email and off the record pigeon instant messenger.
Do you think that stuff is impenetrable? I mean, these guys are really sinister.
Nothing's impenetrable, and computer security and any kind of security is a process, not an event, as a friend of mine put it. But it's a lot harder to just randomly read all your emails if they're encrypted. And I like to use it when I only use it for like 8 or 10 good friends that I know in real life. And I only use it, I use it for like talking about the weather. I use it when I'm talking about nothing that I wouldn't say, to a cop. But I like to do that because the more people doing that more often, the harder it is to find the thought crime that we're committing just by being on the radio right now.
Yeah, and you can overwhelm them with the information, which is what I had always hoped for. I figured, well, how could they keep track of everything? But they're building that data center in Utah. Did you read that? There was a huge article in Wired magazine.
Oh, yeah.
So there's no way. We're not keeping ahead of them.
They tried to get it. They lobbied to get it in Wyoming, but Utah got the contract. Speaking of a lot more people could live on the earth comfortably than can if governments would get out of the way. One thing I don't like to say too loudly, but I'll say it on here. I guess this is saying it loudly, but Wyoming is mostly empty, man. And that's why we live here. We moved here. This state is giant and there's 500,000 people here. I mean, there are suburbs of Atlanta with more people than my state. And, and it's complete. This state could power the country. I mean, if they would unregulate it, we have oil, we have gas, we have natural gas, we have uranium, and it's the largest coal state in America.
People think of Kentucky
and
Virginia.
No, it's Wyoming and wind, man. I mean, we get 50, 60, 70 mile gusts here. It's wind. They're putting up lots of those wind things, but
there's
nobody there
to complain about it.
Yeah.
But I used to travel around the country. My father is a trucker. So in the summers I would just go with him. And I mean, you would just, it took days to travel across the country, and most of it is empty.
Yeah.
I think the limit on human population is basically how much food you can grow, which would be no problem at all if they weren't using food for fuel.
Yeah.
It's
corn. Corn.
It's crazy.
What was that noise? Was that the central scrutinizer in Utah spying on us?
I know, I'm a little afraid that when I say fusion center, it actually flags it, and then you start hearing those clicks.
Well, actually, somebody made a really funny site. It's a band name generator that uses the DHS watch list words as the list for generating band names.
Oh, that's hilarious. Now, you're right. If you just keep doing it over and over again, maybe you can overwhelm them and they can't really hear anything. But I have a feeling they are definitely going to be able to stay one step ahead of us. And it's so scary. And they talk about it as terrorism. I read an article in the Wall Street Journal maybe 2 months ago where they just like offhandedly mentioned that research suggests that dragnet information like that doesn't show patterns for terrorism, that you can't catch terrorists without actually getting a tip off of who the person is. And then you can just use traditional methods of targeting that person. The dragnet has nothing to do with terrorism. It's 100% to keep tabs on us. I mean, that people don't smell a rat. Like, it's not even like, I don't care if they're listening to me, but why are they listening?
Yeah.
Why? What are they up to?
You know, I use encrypted email because I don't want some goon hired off a pizza box in some Utah bunker, you know, reading my love notes to my wife. It's none of their effing business, man.
Yeah, I know they are. And those TSA scanners, this Rapiscan company just settled with them to change out the scanners because they absolutely show you naked. X-ray image is totally naked. They said, no, it doesn't at the beginning. And I'm like, and I knew in the beginning because they would like, you could tell the guys were stopping you for longer than you needed to. And I really honestly felt like they were like somebody was looking at the image and then like checking you out personally. I was so freaked out by it, but they do, you know, they have all this, it's really intrusive. I mean, I'm not worried about it, but I don't care personally. I'm like that modest, but I just think that it's outrageous and they're just kind of softening us up. So we get used to that kind of thing.
Yep.
Is that too Alex Jones for you?
I was just envisioning him in my mind.
A little bit. Sorry. It's not like I get my information from him, but there is some overlap.
You get your information from the same people he gets his information from. We all do.
Everything.
Yeah.
Reality. Yeah, no,
reality.
Stuff is totally real. You know, like this Trapwire thing and that Rapiscan thing. These are just regular articles. You just have to notice which ones are like what.
But I want to move away from that for the last 5 minutes. I want to go to the redemption in the third act, and hear Monica Perez's hope for the future.
Oh my! Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I would say my hope has always been kind of a 1,000-year plan. I feel like the Greeks kind of came up with democracy, and they rejected it, but we're still 2,000 years later, we're actually testing it out. I feel like eventually, maybe it'll be 1,000 years from now. As long as the ideas remain, eventually maybe people will realize that the coercive monopoly state is a scam and a failure, and will begin to build institutions that accommodate a free society instead of what we've done for the past 500 years, which is build institutions to accommodate a coercive, privileged, hierarchical society. So that's my vision. And that's why in the here and now, I really always feel like it's about ideas, just keeping the ideas out there, and people can open their minds, kind of peel away that social conditioning, and just, you know, I'm not a control freak, which is probably why I'm a libertarian. I just hope that it, you know, blossoms because it's true.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
You
put me on the spot there. I wasn't ready for my vision.
Let me go further on that. Do you have a podcast?
My show gets uploaded. So I do my show. It's 2 hours on Sunday, and it gets uploaded on WSBRadio.com. There's a page. It says shows, and then it goes Monica Perez. And you could also go to my website, which is MonicaPerezShow.com, and just noodle around there, and you'll find it. But I think I'm going to start posting them. I don't do this kind of thing.
I'm looking at MonicaPerez.com, and I'm looking for the podcast, you know, for the MP3 archives, and I'm not finding them. And I should be able to, and here's why.
Okay.
In 1,000 years, you want people listening to you. And
okay.
If
I'll
you
do
are,
it.
If
I,
you
I'll
are,
do it myself.
If you are simply broadcasting on radio and putting up YouTube links, and there's some MP3 on a radio station site, but people don't go find them from the radio site the way they would from your site. If you want to be around in 1,000 years, you need to start archiving this stuff.
Okay, I do not necessarily envision myself as part of that future in 1,000 years, but I am happy to make permanent my contribution to the discussion, and I will take your advice, which is great advice, and I'll start immediately. I'll start downloading those podcasts right to my website, and then anybody can get it anytime.
Cool. And if you need any tech help with doing that, I do that in my sleep and have been since podcasting started, or about a year after. So
I am such a tech spaz. I am so bad at it. So yes, I think I might take you up on that.
Yep. I'd do that free to help the Liberty mission. All right. It's been really good having you on here, Monica Perez, and stick around and we'll have our associates send our prizes to you. All right.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Michael.
Worms.
Thank you for listening to the Anarchy Gumbo podcast. Subscribe at kittyfeet.com. That's KittyFeet.com.
Anarchy Gumbo is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network.
All with a rotating guest on a spit, barbecued for your pleasure.
Outtakes, yay.